Republic Radio Station KCHU. It's going out, our broadcast today is going out to Valdez and Cordova in the Prince William Sound area and to other public stations via Alaskom. The purpose of the press conference today is to update on Exxon shoreline treatment progress and possibly more details on the winter plan. We expect Exxon General Manager Otto Harrison and other Exxon executives to address the press today. This is a closed press conference for only bona fide press, no organizations. Greenpeace was set up to videotape but was told to leave, and Greenpeace magazine was stopped at the door. They argued that they were a magazine sold on stands, but the Exxon spokesman Joe Tucker said organization does not qualify and they were not allowed to come in. In addition, Jeremy Kuhn and Dave, the president of CDFU, and Dave Clark of the Prince William Sound Sanders Association tried to come in. They had just finished their own press conference shortly before this, but they were turned away as well. Then Jeremy Kuhn is in now. I talked to him for just a moment, and he said he went to see Otto Harrison and talked to him until he was invited in, so he is with us today. In case you were not able to join us for the CDFU press conference just shortly before, we were having a lot of technical difficulties with our equipment. They had switched us from one room to the next, and maybe I could recap just briefly. With us for that press conference was Ricky Ott, who is a gillnetter and a member of the board of Cordova District Fishermen United. Also, we had Jerry McKeown, president of CDFU, and Dave Clark, who gave the Saners perspective. He's with the Prince William Sound Saners Association. They talked about the winter plan, what they wanted to see, a request for more long-term studies. Basically, were endorsing pretty much the state's plan. They talked about legislation currently in Congress addressing liability issues and asked that people contact their congressmen about those bills.
Okay.
Looks like we're about ready. Otto Harrison has gone to the podium. And we have... looks like it's pretty visual in here. We have a number of pictures on placards of beaches. I didn't go up and look at them closely. They just recently put them up, but it looks like we've got oiled beaches and
trees. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. To get started here, we've got some handouts that we'll provide to you so that if someone wants to be able to follow along with the view graphs that we're using today, they'll be available. So we'll take just a second here and do that.
General Manager Otto Harrison at the podium.
I think we'll be able to get it. I would also mention for you that we've got over here sitting on the side a few of our experts that in the event we have questions that we need some help on. We've got in a blue jacket there's Bob Mastracchio, our technical manager. Ed Gallatin, who is next to him, is deeply involved with our community program. Don Carpenter, our logistics expert in here, and Bill Rainey, whom a number of you will have seen, our operations manager. While we're going through this morning, if you have questions related to the topic we're covering at that time, I'll be glad to answer them, if I can see you out there at that time. If they're of a more general nature, perhaps we can handle those at the end. Good morning. It's good to have you all here today. 6 months ago, we began our mobilization for this large oil spill response effort to clean up the effects of the Valdez incident on Prince William Sound in the Gulf of Alaska. Since then, we've had more than 11,000 people, Alaskans and experts from around the world, to work with us to minimize the effects of this Valdez oil spill, Exxon Valdez oil spill, on nearly 1,100 miles of shoreline. Together we worked not only to clean up the oil, but to protect the most environmentally fragile areas, to care for the wildlife affected by the spill, and to compensate those individuals whose livelihoods were directly interrupted by this tragic event. Today, we invite you to take a look at the sand and the Gulf. And some of you have stood on these shorelines with Don or Bill or myself. What you've seen is a coastline that's almost free of oil. You've seen otters and seals and sea lions swimming in the waters. You've seen salmon spawning in the streams. You're seeing the steady recovery of Prince William Sound in the Gulf of Alaska. On the board on my left here, on your right, there are some before and after photographs. And I think you'll find those photographs most startling. Those of you that have been on the shorelines have seen that impact. The other day I was visiting with a talented young reporter. He told me he sure was tired of writing about this spill. For him, I have some bad news. We're active, we're here, and we're going to have lots of folks here all winter long. For the record, we're not leaving. We're here for the winter, and we're here in force. You'll find me either here in Valdez or at our warehouse facility at the airport or in our Anchorage office. Our people are carrying on an active program of aerial and ground surveillance, and we have emergency response capability available if it's needed. We are continuing extensive data collection and analysis to support our 26 major scientific studies. We are documenting and analyzing the activities that have occurred during these past 6 months. We are inventorying and repairing equipment. We are conducting shoreline surveys from now on through next spring so that we can assess the condition of the shoreline and the condition of any oil that remains, and so that we can determine what steps might be necessary. Some have suggested that as of tomorrow, Exxon is walking away from Alaska and away from our commitment to restore Prince William Sound in the Gulf of Alaska. Our objective, of course, is to restore it to an environmentally stable condition. We are not leaving. We're here, and we care. This morning, I'll discuss with you what we've accomplished during these last 6 months and talk a little more extensively about what we plan to be doing over the next 6 months. Most of you will have seen these shoreline progress view graphs before. This shows the progress that mounts up to nearly 1,100 miles. In Prince William Sound, this is 357 miles with 732 miles in the Gulf of Alaska. Bioremediation is continuing at Smith, Latouche, and Knight Island. And the GIT is still at work. Bill Rainey named this a special effort the Garbage Elimination Team, and they're at work making sure we pick up any litter that's left in the sound or around the Gulf of Alaska. We have all segments signed off by the Coast Guard in Prince William Sound. Moving from there to begin to look now at our wintertime program. This is a chart that we used when we originally presented this program, but we have expanded features of it, so I'll mention it for just a moment. We have moved about 784 truckloads of equipment from here to Anchorage. So the progress of putting our equipment into facilities where we can repair and maintain it is well underway. We've expanded the boat fleet. Last time that I talked to you, we had four boats, large boats in that fleet. We now have five, and I'll talk about those boats more in just a minute. Our helicopters are contracted. They are IFR twin-engine helicopters, and we'll talk about those in just a moment. Not shown on this chart is a Learjet that we're using. for fast aerial surveillance and aerial photographic work. It's not on the payroll full-time, so we haven't shown it here, but we will be using it throughout the winter period. This is the Don Bollinger. It's one of our wintertime boats. You see it here. It has satellite communication capability. It has a small helideck on the boat. It is a large vessel capable of withstanding the winter conditions and handling the programs that we want to lay out. If we look at the next chart here, and I apologize for all of the detailed specifications that are on this chart, but if you will, let me just take a moment and talk to you a little bit about what's on here. The Don Bollinger is a 155-foot boat, 34-foot width. It has a deck area that's got 600 square feet on it. It has extensive fuel capacity, and it has berthing capacity for 28 people. On the Don Bollinger, as we sail it, as the Nikki Marie sailed this morning, it will have on it two kinds of people. We'll have on it a quick response team. This is an experienced oil spill cleanup supervisor. It will also have on it a team that works with that supervisor. These will either be three or four people, depending on the boat, that is capable of working with that supervisor to handle any of the equipment that we have on board that boat. Those boats are also being used for our scientific program, and depending on the boat involved, various types of scientists will be going out to conduct the scientific program. Let's look for a moment at some of the type of equipment that we have on board each one of these boats. This is a response vessel package, if you will. And you'll notice that we have things in here that range from sorbent boom, and these are sorbent boom bundles. We have containment boom. We have insulated Arctic boots, down to the 55-gallon drum of hydraulic oil. It is a complete package that allows us to have on-site capability to do the range of functions that are required in the event that an emergency occurs. These have been very carefully selected by the experts that we have to call on to put this package together so that we have a high quality on-site response capability, as well as the people there that can conduct that response. Look next at the aircraft that we have involved. Again, this has got on the chart more detail than I'm sure that we want to go through now. But if you will, let me call your attention to the helicopters. These are Bell 212 helicopters. They come from ERA. They are winterized from the factory with a factory winterization package. They have IFR capability. This twin turbine gives us some redundancy. Each one of them has a complete winter survival package. Passengers will wear survival suits. This says here they are capable of being equipped with rescue winches. I talked to our aviation supervisor yesterday, who tells me that these are now in the process of being equipped with these rescue winches. In addition, they have extra fuel tanks that gives them an extended range capability, which is important through this operation. So we feel very good that we have a high quality, safe air fleet, which will also support our emergency response capability, as well as our surveillance program, aerial surveillance program, as well as our scientific program. This chart shows the 19 cities and villages. Whoops, pardon me. What we got here is Prince William Sound, excuse me. What we have on this chart are the contingency response packages that we have in Prince William Sound. We actually show a couple of things. If you look here, this symbol on here shows contingency response bases. We also have some fuel dumps that we've located at key spots so that we can extend the range of our equipment. But what I would call your attention to are these contingency response packages that you see at various locations. And we've shown on here also the hatcheries so that you can get a feel for how they're related, located relative to those hatcheries. This is an example for Chenega, but it gives you an idea of the equipment that we're locating at each one of these contingency response locations. Chenega happens to be the largest amount of equipment we have at a location. It takes a little more effort, booming effort at that point to cover it. But again, if you look, this ranges from things like inflatable containment boom, intermediate containment boom, sorbent boom, down again to where we get down to generators, suction hoses, all of those things that are needed to allow you to immediately and effectively on-site conduct the emergency response that is needed at that particular point. It's a broad range of equipment, again, because we aren't able to totally define for you what the emergency might be. So we've tended to have a package that includes nearly everything that we can think of. Okay, this one shows the 19 cities and villages that we're making arrangements with for wintertime response. Actually, you'll see there's a 20th one located on here just because we show Anchorage. Anchorage, of course, is our warehouse base, which has a large reserve of all of the equipment that we're talking about. You may be curious as to where do we stand on those arrangements with those 19 cities and villages, and we have contacted them all. We have actually a signed agreement with Sydney right now. We have a signed agreement with Homer and English Bay. And we're in the various stages of progress of completing that for all of those. And we hope that we would be able to sign up each one of those. For September the 16th, in the event that they are not all signed up, and that is a realistic possibility, we will maintain additional capacity within our fleet so that we can cover that until they are signed up. But if you will, let me show you what we're talking about having in those villages available to them, cities and villages. The boxes that are on this side are what we're maintaining for villages and cities. This is additional supplies that are in the villages. The villages being more remote, we're providing some survival capability for those areas that is not necessary for working in the city areas. We're providing this equipment in the event that there is some response needed at that site. In addition, the arrangements that we're making with these communities involves monitoring, includes sample pickup of tar balls if any occur, and it includes discretionary pickup by those locations of tar balls. We're particularly interested in getting monitoring feedback of the condition of their beaches and shorelines on the basis of every 2 weeks so that we continue to add into our database the conditions of shorelines in Prince William Sound and around the Gulf of Alaska throughout every month during the wintertime. Let me move over now to the science program. This is a very simplified sketch that just shows you basically what we're looking at, then I'll give it to you in a little bit more detail. As you're aware, the oil primarily impacted in this upper intertidal zone. For the science programs, they're really in two phases. One is to be sure that we understand the condition of that shoreline, and that helps us decide what is necessary for a spring plant. In addition, we have some near-term and longer-term effects that we're looking at as far as condition of the water, the condition of the sediments, the condition of the biological community which live in or near these waters.
Put the next one up.
This breaks these studies out, if you will, into a near-term and a long-term effect. Near-term here being those things that are designed to get us to a decision next spring. And that really applies to all of those items except one on this list. May I tell you what that exception is? This archaeological description, and that's a lot of work we have to do this during this winter period, will not be publicly available. There are state requirements and there are arrangements with the native villages involved. That material is very confidential. That will not be released publicly. But for the other shoreline data that we're talking about, we'll be on a data exchange program with NOAA and with ADEC so that jointly we can combine our resources to come up with the best answer for the spring of 1990. To give you a feel for what we're talking about, this map shows 35 different sites that we're talking about for shoreline monitoring, that near-term piece of it. We have the data. I didn't propose to show you the maps on the long-term piece. But what you'll notice, of course, that's Smith Island, that's Green Island, that's Point Helen, that's Latouche. These are designed to be in the areas that have been heavily impacted, that have been bioremediated, or that are environmentally sensitive. So what we're trying to do is monitor through the wintertime and on into the spring as a continuation of what we have been monitoring, those shorelines to give us information. ADEC and NOAA will be also monitoring in the Sound. Outside of the Sound in the Gulf of Alaska, we also have these points that are shown in here that that cover these areas. As you know, there was some impact on the Katmai. We're looking at sensitive areas around the Kodiak Island as well as areas in Homer and Seward so that we complete our package of understanding what's going on in the shorelines. Combination of these studies will give us a good understanding of what's going on up and down the coast. We're doing the same sort of thing in the same sort of detail, multiple sites, for the other longer term studies that I showed you on the earlier chart. People. We always have to talk about people, which are instrumental to making any good program run. And we've been extremely fortunate during this spring and summer people to have, spring and summer period, to have excellent people involved. All of the people that were involved at every work site are just fabulous folks, and we can't say enough to express our gratitude for that work effort that's gone on. A good number of those people will be continuing their work through the winter. This gives you a feel for what some of that is. There are going to be over 300 people that are involved in what we call the Alaska operations. In addition, we have about 250 people that come off of a call-up list. This is a call-up list maintained by our contractor, VECO, of people that had experience in this oil spill. In addition, they will have Arctic or cold weather survival training, and actually 50 of that 250 have already undergone that training. So that program's well along for getting underway. Outside of Alaska, to support the science program that's going on in here, we have a number of laboratories and institutions that are providing support, analyzing data, and doing studies for us. And you can see the size of that program is over 300 also. So when we talk about resources that are available for working during this wintertime program, we're talking about all of this. Which kind of totals up over 900 people, of which you've got about 700 people that are very active in the program on a day-to-day basis. That program will go, as I think I've described to you, will go up and down a little bit. There'll be times when we'll be higher than that number. There may be some times when we're a little lower than that number. But it gives you a good idea of what the program is about. We think that's a substantial resource. To give you a feel for that science program and some of that people resource item, there are more than 150 or so advanced degrees, 75 PhDs. the average experience of the workforce that's going on in the Alaska operations is about 16 years. So we have a very experienced, highly qualified team of people that we're dedicating to this effort. And that's the way we have attempted to run our spring and summer program, and it's the way we want to continue our winter program. If you will, I'll summarize. We think our spring and summer objectives have been met, and that ranges all the way from lightering and removing the Exxon Valdez to protecting the hatcheries, to getting the free oil off the water, and to reaching our shoreline progress objectives. Our winter program is off to a good start. We're off and running on that right now. Some of our functions have already moved into our Anchorage office. Other personnel relocations will be scheduled between now and the end of the month. Our science program is underway. The Nikki Marie sail today is a kickoff on that program. The response supplies are on hand for deployment. Remember, these are the response supplies for both the cities and villages for the response at the hatcheries, as well as what we're putting on the individual boats themselves. Our contingency response boats, planes, and helicopters are ready. Safety training has started. And after this, if you'll go down to the dock or want to go look at it, the Don Bollinger, the one that I showed you in the view graph, is actually at the dock right now. And you'll be able to see it when you look out the window. The tide is low, but you'll be able to see its satellite receiver sticking up over and its small helideck on the back of it, right down, right outside at the city dock. Okay, with that in mind, that's our program. Blue, did you?
Over to the question.
Okay.
Stay near the mic, please.
That's great. Today, the Coast Guard is, what I'm saying, is it's in process today, but today they're signing off on the last segments in Prince William Sound. Today, all signed segments in Prince William Sound are signed off. Yes, sir.
Does that include Point Helen?
That includes Point Helen. Yes, sir.
Any continuing
work being done today on Point Helen? Yes, sir. If you recall, I mentioned three areas where bioremediation continues to go on at this as we talk. They're Point Helen, Smith Island, and Latouche, or Sleepy Bay, if you've been at the northern edge of Latouche Island. Yes, sir. No, I'm sorry. As you can tell, it is substantial, but We have been so busy putting it together and getting people lined up, getting our science programs defined. I just don't have a dollar value on it for you. I'm sorry. Yes, I'd be glad to. Way back, if some of you will have participated in some of the very early talks that we gave and in our briefing, we used to list a set of priorities that we had for this spill. And I'm going to go back to that set of priority list because they haven't changed and tell you how we performed on those priorities or objectives. The first of those priorities was to offload or lighter the Exxon Valdez and to move it out and to move it to repair port. And as you know, all of that was done successfully. The second objective was to protect the hatcheries. There's no oil that has gotten into any of the hatcheries. The third objective was to get the free oil off the water. That was the initial program. It was a major oil skimming program. We had a lot of very well-qualified people involved, had every type of boom and every type of skimmer known to mankind involved. And that work was completed sometime during May. That we wouldn't cause any harm to the otters or seals or birds that are involved. And that's what we're describing to you with these photographs, and that's where we are right now. Now, I have to qualify that. Let me give you my qualification on it. Okay? And it's the ones that I just talked about that we're bioremediating. If you've been on Green Island, and it's been bioremediated for about a month, you know, you find rocks that look like this on Green Island. And rocks that look like this are environmentally stable. They do not harm wildlife. And in fact, when you go over there and flip up and look under those rocks, you can see a very active biological community in place. You don't find that at Sleepy Bay and Smith Island and Point Helen yet. And what we're saying is the bioremediation application, which is going on right now, probably needs about a month or 6 weeks to be effective. So while the treatment is done, the bugs don't work quite that fast, and they're going to get in that shape. We're highly confident that we're going to get in that. So those are not in the shape that we're describing to you for Green Island yet, but if you haven't been on Green Island and you've been involved with this spill for a long time, I would encourage you to get out there. You'll feel much better about how the entire process is going. Did that wrap that up enough for you? There is a spot in Green Island in the middle, if you've been on it, that was not bioremediated initially. And as I recall, that was bioremediated this week. Bill, is that right? There is a spot in the middle that was bioremediated just this week. I'm guessing that's half a mile or less. It's a fairly short stretch on Green Island that was not bioremediated in the first place. No, but we can get it for you. Be glad to get it for you. Right. Well, let me make a stab at it, okay? You know, bioremediation is a process of adding fertilizer to encourage the growth of the natural microbes that occur in these intertidal zones, in that encouraging the growth to balance their diet. They eat oil. In fact, this rock allows you to understand that as well as probably anything if you haven't seen one of these. This rock was bioremediated in the rain. And consequently, the top of this rock, where the rain was going, the bioremediation material washed off of it. And if you walk out on the beach and you'll see a number of rocks that look like this, and you can almost pick the sections where the heavy rain occurred. But you go out there and start turning those rocks over, and this is what you find the bugs have done for you. And any of you that were at Green Island before, and Green Island became quite famous as Commissioner Kelso used it as his example with the House and Senate of a beach that would never be clean. If you've been to Green Island before and you've seen the depth of penetration that occurred in the oil, and you can go out there and start turning over rocks and go down as deep as you can turn over rocks in that area, and you find they look like this, you feel pretty good about that process. Now, that's just allowing the bugs to work, the natural bugs that occur to work. We have two kinds of fertilizer. We have a liquid fertilizer that we're putting on, and in some places, we're adding a granular fertilizer. And it's not much different than the reason you put different kind of fertilizers on your yard. The granular fertilizer is a slow-release material that we think will fall down in between the rocks and slowly release fertilizer over a longer period of time to continue this growth of the microbes so that they'll continue to eat on oil. And I think the slow release period for that is about 40 days. We think that these microbes will continue to work through the wintertime at about 25% of their maximum effectiveness that they got to during the summertime. That was a long answer, but that's my understanding of what it's about.
How much did Exxon
spend on cleanup today? We spent something over $1 billion. I don't have a better defined number like that, but once I get that large, it's certainly a significant number. I think it's just not ready, but let me ask Bob, is that, do you have a feel for the status of the timing of that study? This is Bob Mastracchio. For those of you that can't spell that, I'll spell it for you later.
I'd like to say a few words about that study. Yes, the results were collected, and we have reviewed them with NOAA. Now, at the time you asked for that data, the results had not been interpreted, and the raw data itself is not very useful. What you have to do is interpret it, and that work is going on now, and NOAA has been charged with preparing an overall report. So when that report is ready, then it will be made available.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah, whenever y'all raise your hand out there, I can't see past the lights very well, so you need to be sure that you're helping me. Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm not sure that I want to get in debate clean, so let me answer that the way I normally do, if you will. Okay? When the bio, with the qualification of some of these needing time for the bioremediation treatment to work, I consider all of these to be environmentally stable. There are hundreds of miles that anybody would consider clean. So I invite you to look at these photographs of heavily oiled beaches when we're through. We have not said that we have removed all of the oil. But I do think that we have the beaches subject to the bioremediation working on these recent ones in a condition where they will not harm the otters, seals, or birds, or native wildlife in that area. And that's a very important objective to us. None of this work has been cosmetic. None of this work has been PR. This is all very serious effort, and we don't think this cleanup is cosmetic, and I don't think anybody that looks at these photographs, or anybody that stands on Green Island, or anybody that stands in Northwest Bay, or Naked Island, or Gore Point, pick your spot, I don't think anybody can look at that and decide that that's a cosmetic effort. That is a real cleanup effort. It is a major effort, and I think it's well done, thanks to the thousands of dedicated people who worked very hard to get it in that condition.
But you're working at Nexterry, so you're going from that part of the environmental table, so it's hard to see what job might be made to do Nexterry.
What we've said is that we're going, if we thought it was already done, we wouldn't be putting in all this work this winter. We're keeping all of this equipment available. The equipment that we've got, we're repairing and putting in first-class condition. We're running 26 scientific studies, so we'll know what these conditions are. We're going to study these beaches and shorelines and waters throughout the winter so that we jointly, with everybody else that needs to be involved, can look and decide what, if anything, needs to be done next spring. We have never said that we were going to walk away and not do that. In fact, we have always said the other one. We're going to come back, and we're going to do that, and we have a major effort underway to achieve that. Well, as I've also said before, but I'll repeat, I do not know, nor do I think anybody else knows, what the conditions of these shorelines will be next spring. Nor do we know what the shape of our condition of the oil will be if there's any oil that remains. And what we're committed to do is to do the studies so that if we reach that position next spring, we can do it on an informed basis. We're not claiming that we have the information to make that statement right now. We're going to go through the process so that we can make that statement. Yes, sir. That is correct. However, you have to qualify that with thinking about the condition of the material involved. And probably, again, Green Island is the best example to use. Green Island, before we bioremediated, was a bad sheener or bleeder, if you will. If you flew by Green Island before we bioremediated, after we had washed, you generally found a sheen after a storm or a high tide at Green Island. Today, you do not. You fly Green Island and you don't find sheens. And why does that occur? That occurs because the bugs, the microbes, if you will, preferentially eat the lighter ends of the hydrocarbon. Okay? So by accelerating the process with fertilizer, the bugs are going to eat a little more of that earlier than they would than if you were allowing a natural process to go on. But certainly, in the areas that we did not bioremediate, there is some natural bioremediation going on at those sites. Yes. Well, basically, when we're looking at subsurface oil, one is we're trying to measure what subsurface oil exists and how it changes over time. That's the first measurement you want to have. The second study that we have going on is a laboratory study, which is an accelerated aging of oil. What we're trying to do is find out now, within the next few weeks, what any remaining oil would look like next spring. Because that's important in understanding the chemistry or the biology or the physics of anything that would treat any remaining oil next spring. So we're going to be measuring what is there. We're going to be using our laboratory studies to give us a better idea on what the oil looks like. We will then combine that with some R&D to say, with that combination of knowledge, what is there that can be done that would enhance or improve or accelerate the removal of any oil that needed to be removed at any future time. Yes, sir.
You say you successfully met your objectives for the cleanup, but you had to suffer through quite a bit of criticism through the duration. Do you feel that the critics have been unjust or that they've been demanding the impossible from you? And did you feel handicapped by the technology available to you in the cleanup and wish
I guess there are two questions. One is the critics, and second one is the technology. All right. Let me answer the critics, if you will, first. I cannot blame our critics for being critical. When I came out with a April the 15th and then later with a May 1st plan and then with a May 24th plan and was telling all of you folks, plus the agencies that we had to do with, that we were going to get these hundreds of miles of shoreline done, and all that you could see was we had all of this effort going on out there slugging our way out on a few miles of pinnipet area. And you knew that it was tough and you knew the going was slow. You had to have a lot of credibility. You know, you had to wonder if we knew what we were talking about. And I could not be critical of anybody for challenging our credibility in that kind of case. While I don't like to be criticized, our folks don't like to be criticized, but we understand that there are some times when you're in a position and the circumstances are such that that kind of criticism may be justified. Relative to the technology, I would tell you that we have applied the best technology that's available around the world, and we've stepped forward in the areas of bioremediation and in the areas of beach cleaning chemicals. We've carried the technology a step beyond where it was. We've built, we've innovated, we've modified practices. We've taken advantage of all the know-how of guys like Jim O'Brien, who's in the back of the room, of guys like Dr. Ed Owens, who advised us in these areas. We incorporated all of that, we built on it, and I think we substantially improved all of that. Would I like to have had some gee whiz gadget that soaked it all up immediately? You know, you bet. And if there had been one around, I think we'd have gotten it. I do think we used the very best we could. I think we used the best available, and I think we made the best available better than it was. Do I feel bad that people criticized us over our technology? If people did, and I didn't, I don't recall hearing a lot of criticism on that. But if we were, I think maybe I can understand that. But I think that people that have been there watching, people that have been back to Green Island, people that have been to Snug Harbor, or people that have been out to watch the omnibooms at work, or people that got to watch the Corexit test, have to feel pretty good about what we've learned out of this exercise. We've had a fantastic laboratory. We've learned a lot out of it. This winter, we're going to look at every foot of that boom that we pulled out, that boom that'll run around Manhattan Island three times. We're going to decide what of that boom worked well. How did it survive well? We've had more boom in the water. We've had it in the water longer than anybody in the world has. So we're going to be able to learn more out of that, and we hope to share what we learn out of that. We instituted the sharing process by inviting participants from other companies to work in this program. And we've had people from other companies such as Chevron, Texaco, Mobil, Conoco, work in this operation so that they get the benefit of this learning experience. And I think the learning, the technology, what we've been able to do in this operation, I think will help all of us in the end. It's a hard way to have to get it, tough way to have to get it, but we're going to take advantage of all the good things that come out of it. Oh, you know, if I had 20/20 hindsight, Jeff, and you know, had all of my druthers, which I never have good hindsight ahead of time, and I never get all of my druthers. But if I were going to pick on the heavily oiled areas out of the things we know, the thing that would have let you treat those fastest today, I would tell you what my procedure would be. I would go in on those heavily areas and do what we've just done with our normal mule train. I'd get the debris out of the way that didn't belong there. I'd then follow it with a Corexit 9580 or whatever the best beach cleaner treatment was. I would then wash behind that, because you do have to wash behind that treatment, and I would bioremediate behind that. And I think that would give you all the advantage of minimizing the washing effect on the beach so that you tend to minimize the detrimental environmental impact. As you know, the environmentalists have been concerned, and we have been concerned. We understand that concern, because we're concerned about the same thing, about the amount of washing we had to do on some of these beaches. To get some of the beaches that you've seen this clean with just the washing process took weeks and weeks on occasion. It was not a matter of just days, it was weeks of steady washing. The end result looks good. I think we could have gotten a better net environmental impact with a shorter process. I'm not sure that it would have cost any less money to put all of that process together, but I do think the entire thing probably would have moved a little faster, particularly on the 60 or so miles of very heavily oiled beach. Yes, sir. Okay. Let me tell you how I think we're leaving the beaches. We're leaving the beaches so that they will not harm the wildlife that's in the area. The otters, the seals, the birds, the barnacles that grow in between the rocks, the small shrimp. That normal wildlife that's in that zone doesn't do that. And again, I take you back to my rock from Green Island. There is some oil left on that rock. It doesn't rub off, but you know, it's not as clean as that side of the rock. But it is not environmentally harmful, and it's not inhibiting the wildlife restoration in the area. Now, I'll let you pick your definition of clean. I'm going to tell you, we opted for being sure that we could take care of the birds and animals in the area as our target.
How much oil has Exxon recovered, to the best of your knowledge, now that the cleanup is over? Not a mulch and not oily water, but oil.
I don't know. Let me tell you what I do know. We do know that we have measured in the tank something more than 60,000 barrels of oil and emulsion that we have picked up. We brought in one of the world's experts to give us a good measurement of that. the emulsion is so tight that he was not able to do that for us. We are taking this oil to Seattle, and we are going to break it, and we are going to run it back through a refinery. We will have an exact measurement. I don't have an exact measurement at this moment. We also have a calculation that our people have made. As you know, we picked up lots of bags and 40 or 50 million pounds of debris, about how much average oil is in a bag. You know, and they sampled some and they took a look at it, and I don't remember what the calculation is. We got a calculation for that. Certainly that's not a precise calculation, but it's an indicative calculation. But I think we're still several weeks away from being able to give you that firm answer. Yes, sir. Is there somebody back here? No. Well, as most of you would know, I'm not a public relations person. I'm a rock washer. I told our folks early when we started here, and I arrived here on April the 5th, and have worked with these guys for a good part of that time. In our early discussions on this, my position was we're not going to win this war in press conferences. We're not going to win it with advertising. We're going to win it by going out and cleaning up the water, cleaning up the shoreline, taking care of the wildlife. And that's what we've been on about. And I really believe in the long run, that's what we owed to the public. I think that's what we wanted to give our shareholders. And I think in the long term, that's what restores credibility. I don't know of anybody that could have been involved with these thousands of men and women as they stood on beaches, as they worked in warehouses, as they worked in offices, and not being impressed with what they did. And that kind of effort that all of these people put into here are the kind of things that will restore credibility. Credibility has not been our driver. Our driver has been to clean up the shoreline and clean up the water. Yes, sir. Well, if the liquid waste that I've described to you that are the emulsion are going down into Seattle to be broken and processed. On our some of our wastewater, it's been treated here through the Valdez facility, and on our aerated treatment lagoon, which is a floating wastewater treatment facility. On our solid waste, a good number of you will have heard our incinerator sagas. One incinerator is working in Prince William Sound. At the moment, it burns about 75 tons a day. The other incinerator at Kodiak, we had to release it before we were ever able to fire it. The rest of the waste is going either through Seward or Anchorage. And there, it's being compacted and shipped down to Oregon and being placed in a hazardous waste site, landfill site. Let me mention one thing. We did have Larry Rawl, Lee Raymond, number one and number two out of our Exxon Corporation, and we had Mel Harrison and Elliot Catarulla in here this week. They actually stood on shorelines with us. They were in here to give me a little bit on my report card. To take a look at it. They spent a day of very intense discussions with all of our people, getting direct feedback. They have been meeting with the governor this morning in Juneau. We do have a press release that I think we've got them over here. We've got a press release on that meeting that is available to you so that you can get the feedback. And I haven't read it myself, so I can't tell you what's in it other than they just handed it to me and said it's here. Okay, if that takes care of everybody, I appreciate it. Thank you for coming.
You've been listening to General Manager of Exxon Operations in Valdez, Otto Harrison, at a special briefing for the press this morning on winter activities and answering some questions for the press on various things that are going on. He said that today the Coast Guard has signed off on the final beach segments and that work is completed. Those final beach segments are out at Point Helen. There is still one team, well actually there's two teams I think. What I was told by Exxon spokesman Joe Tucker is that beachers, workers are coming off the beaches through Valdez at the rate of about 300 to 400 a day. These last 3 days they're moving 1,500 to 2,000 people off the beaches. And there is going to be one team still out on the Sound after the 15th of September, which is tomorrow, and that will be the bioremediation team, which is finishing up work at this point. About 25% of the 380 winter workers that are relocating to Anchorage will be gone and out of Valdez by tomorrow. Others are expected to be around till later on during the month, target date of maybe the 22nd. Might be a little bit longer than that, but we do have still more meetings next week. The final briefing of the Federal On-Scene Coordinator by the Operations Steering Committee will be this coming Tuesday night, and that will be the final wrap-up when they review what has happened between all agencies and talk about it. Otto Harrison has said that there will be 380 in Alaska operations remaining here in the state, about 250 on the call-up response list, and maybe 320 will be outside working on various science programs. I just had my runner go over and see what the press release says about the meeting of the high officials of Exxon with the governor this morning. And no, he was, I'm sorry, Otto was mistaken. This is not a story, not a press release about the meeting with the governor at all. It's just about completing work on the shorelines and beginning a buildup for the winter program. This has been a special broadcast live from the Valdez Civic Center this morning, through made available to you through public radio station KCHU, the voice of Prince William Sound. I'm Sue Rapley.